Chapter 18, worlds contain characters. So he's gone from worlds straight back to the storyline.
Characters don't necessarily need to be a part of deliberate storytelling.
That's true.
You can just kind of build a character and then offer it to the player. I'm trying to think of an example because I feel like a game like that where it's just like you're just this guy and then it's kind of a sandboxy game and you can be one, but I can't think of what it is. I think I kind of imagine that in sandbox MMOs like Elite Dangerous. Elite Dangerous doesn't really have a guy for you to be. Oh, but EVE Online did. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay, so EVE Online added something a while ago where you actually had an avatar instead of just being the faceless soul of the spaceship.
Hmm.
And the last time I played EVE Online, which was maybe 3 years ago, I borrowed a friend's account and made a new character, and I was surprised that there were characters to make, and I asked him, when do you see your character? And he said, that's okay. You don't see him, and neither does anybody else, but you can buy fancy hats for him, so that's good.
Huh.
Anyway.
I thought they were going to do some sort of, like, ground combat stuff.
They spun that off into its own whole different game.
Oh. So the character creators is, like, a vestigial remnant of that system.
Yeah, I mean, you can still buy them hats, so I guess maybe it's a profit center. I don't know. But anyway, I made the character, and the character, you know, looks like some kind of hardened space warrior, and I'm flying around, like, mining asteroids with him or something.
Sure.
But the game doesn't give you a story to follow at all, but it does kind of give you a character, and even though it doesn't characterize him very strongly, because you can only pick from, you know, various different types of grizzled, and then it gives you some characterization about the people group your character comes from.
Okay.
So you know a little bit about, like, his origins, and you know what he looks like, and so you can kind of infer a little bit of his history.
So there's a bit of world building.
Yeah, there's a little bit of world building, and just the teensiest bit of characterization just in the options they give you, and, like, the clothes that he wears, because you don't get to pick your clothes unless you buy them.
Ah, okay.
And so there's just the tiniest bit of characterization. And so because of that, I kind of identified with this guy as I flew around in my spaceship mining asteroids and stuff. And so you can have a character in or without actually leading the player through a story.
Right. And you could also have a character that's defined by a story without really doing any world building. It's just kind of an acontextual story about things that are happening to this character without any real world around it.
Right. You can also have...
Like the new Star Wars movies.
Well, kind of. You can also have a character who goes through a story full of world building, but that doesn't get any characterization or character building, like Portal.
Yeah, true.
I don't know about Portal 2, I haven't played it, but in the original Portal, like, you don't even know her name is Chell. Like, I don't know how people figured that out. Is it on the box? I didn't get a box.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's probably her name tag or something. You can see her name tag. I don't know. Anyway, Lens 75 is the lens of the avatar. The avatar is the player's gateway into the world of a game. To ensure that the avatar brings out as much of the player's identity as possible, ask yourself these questions. Is my avatar an ideal form likely to appeal to my players? And does my avatar have iconic qualities that let a player project themselves into the character? And I've underlined the player's identity and asked why the player's identity. But I think it's pretty clear that they have in mind some sort of power fantasy or something like that.
Or at least relatability.
Yeah.
Was that the whole thing?
That's the lens of the avatar.
Wow,
that's it.
Brief.
Yeah, just figure out what your players want. Just figure out what your players want, figure out what kind of game you want, and then just make that game. Just do it.
I did think it was interesting that he is asking you to make sure that your characters are ideal specimens.
Yeah.
So he's clearly in the all avatars should be sexy camp.
Well, ideal for whatever it is that your players are playing the game for, I presume.
Right.
I mean, the Kerbals are an ideal for space travel because they don't have to eat or breathe.
If they don't have to breathe, why do they wear spacesuits?
It's to protect their gentle brains from impact with the ground. As evidenced by if you land on their heads, they're fine.
Oh.
The spacesuits are working as intended. Lens 76, the lens of character function. To make sure your characters are doing everything your game needs them to do,
Ask yourself these questions. What are the roles I need my characters to fill? What characters have I already imagined? What characters map well to which roles? Can any characters fill more than one role? Do I need to change the characters to better fit the roles? And do I need any new characters?
So I haven't written any stories in a really long time, and I haven't written any good stories ever. But I feel like this is really basic, like, how to put people in a story.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause, like, in just about in building any story that I can think of, you're like, well, we're going to do this thing, and all right, here's the main character. He's going to, this is kind of where the movie's going to go. We want him to start, you know, as a farm boy, and we want him to turn into the greatest pilot in the galaxy who destroys the star, or Death Star. And he's going to need, you know, a wise old man to help him out. Let's get one of those in here. Maybe Alec Guinness can help out. Right? Like, I don't know. This seems really elementary.
Yeah, like I said, he seems like he's torn between three different modes of address where he's trying to tell people how to make things at all and how to make things that communicate and how to make games specifically. And the character thing is just like a part of communication. You want to communicate with people in a way they understand, and they understand themselves better than anything else, hopefully. And so you want to communicate with them on a level that is like themselves, and so you make characters because characters are what people are familiar with.
And then, like, well, how do you communicate with characters? Well, then you have to have roles, and you have to have... Yeah, it's all very straightforward.
Yeah.
From a storytelling perspective. But none of this is really necessary for characters in a world. Like, characters don't generally fill roles in a world. Characters are looking after themselves and are trying to survive. You know, like, none of this is... The lens of character function is about how your characters support the story of your game, not about how your characters support the world of your game.
Right.
Or the mechanics.
Or the aesthetic.
Or the aesthetics, that's true. The other tetrad elements. Or the technology, as long as we're going through the whole thing.
Yep.
Lens 77 is even shorter. The lens of character traits. To ensure that the traits of a character show in what they say and do, ask yourself these questions. What traits define my character? And how do these traits manifest themselves in the words, actions, and appearance of my character? Again, super.
Do you know how to describe people? Because if you don't, maybe don't try to communicate through storytelling.
Right. Will you have trouble with this lens? No? Then why did I put it in here? Yes? Then why are you reading this book?
Yeah, maybe you should do math.
And then he's got this incredibly, very much more detailed chart than most of the other charts in his book.
That chart has so many axes, I can't even see them all from here.
Yeah, it's got a lot of stuff going on. And it's from another book called Better Game Characters by Design by Catherine Ipsitter. But that is very interesting.
Like a whole barrel full of psychology over there?
It's got four axes all in kind of a target-shaped circular... XC thing. One is extra introverted, one is separated and connected, one is dominant submissive, and one is friendly hostile. And then I don't know if these are supposed to be non-orthogonal or what, but then there's a whole bunch of lots of names given to things. There are numbers all over the place, so I'm not sure what that's supposed to say. And then he gives an example. Oh, I see. It's the dominant, submissive, friendly, hostile chart. And then a dominant friendly is extroverted, and a hostile submissive is introverted, apparently.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so forth. So then he's got the characters from Star Wars. So Darth Vader is a dominant hostile, and Chewbacca is a dominant friendly, and then Han Solo is right in the middle, because he's not extroverted at all.
No.
I guess.
He's not dominant either.
And Luke Skywalker is a friendly submissive, and C-3PO is just like an exaggerated version of Luke Skywalker, apparently. Which, okay, that's fair. Stiff, awkward, barely likable.
Yeah, that works.
And then Ben Kenobi is just kind of a toned-down version of Chewbacca. Great. And Princess Leia is a toned-down Darth Vader. So, okay, it makes sense. It works. All the most likable characters right in the middle. And then we've got all our villains on the outside, and then all of our main characters are just kind of toned-down versions of the villains.
So Chewbacca and C-3PO are villains now?
I don't see any reason to counteract my previous statement.
Okay.
Which brings us to Lens 78, the lens of the interpersonal circumplex.
What?
Understanding the relationships between your characters is crucial, and one way to do this is to create a graph with one axis labeled hostile-friendly and the other labeled submissive-dominant, and you pick a character to analyze and put them in the middle, and plot out where the other characters lie relative to that character and ask yourself these questions. Are there any gaps in the chart, and why are they there? And would it be better if the gaps were filled? Are there extreme characters on the graph, and if not, would it be better if there were? And are the characters friends in the same quadrant or in different quadrants, and what if they were different? And what even is the interpersonal circumplex, and why do we have such a complicated name for it? And why do I keep reading, even though he's finished with a lens?
I don't actually know what circumplex means, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't have a two-axis graph.
Yeah, well, it certainly looks complicated when you draw a bunch of circles around it and then, like, fill in all the little pie wedges with all kinds of little words and numbers.
He did at least explain that Han Solo is in the middle of that graph, not because he's actually objectively in the middle, but because we're comparing everyone else to Han Solo.
Yeah.
So we're saying Princess Leia is just as friendly or hostile as Han Solo, but more dominant.
Yeah. I really feel like Chewbacca belongs on the opposite corner, though. Like, Chewbacca is more hostile than anything, and he's more submissive than anything.
He is pretty submissive.
And he is really hostile.
Oh, only to the people. Only to
everyone else. Yes. That's kind of the point, isn't it? I mean, Darth Vader is kind of submissive and friendly when it comes to the Emperor.
That's true. I mean, he does throw him in a pit.
Yeah.
That's not very friendly.
But if Chewbacca ends up in the other corner, then the graph is much more filled out, because now you've got people in all the corners.
Currently, there are no hostile subsets in Star Wars.
In his graph, yeah. Anyway, hostile, friendly, dominant, submissive. Interesting. I wonder if there is a third axis. Seems like there probably should be. Then we could have a three-dimensional space of character relationships.
Yeah.
Lens 79, the lens of the character web. To flesh out your character's relationships better, make a list of all your characters and ask yourself these questions. How specifically does each character feel about each of the others? Are there any connections unaccounted for, and how can I use those? Are there too many similar connections, and how can they be more different? So I feel like we're moving into the actually not elementary and kind of useful area here.
Yeah.
Except that he gives no examples. I mean, he writes out a list, but he doesn't actually make, like, an actual web graph of all your characters and stuff. Seems like that would be kind of neat.
Yeah, it does.
I know I did something like that when I was writing Fall from the Sky, trying to chart out, like, how do these characters relate to each other, and especially how do their characters' relationships change over the course of the book? Like, what's the vector of their relationship?
Sure.
To give some dynamic feel to it.
Right. Seems to make sense.
Lens 80, the lens of status. When people interact, they take on different behaviors depending on their status levels. To make your characters more aware of each other, ask yourself these questions. What are the relative status levels of the characters in my game, and how can they show appropriate status behaviors?
Now I just want to see a comedy sketch about people asking each other about their status levels.
Conflicts of statuses are interesting. How are my characters vying for status? Changes of status are interesting. How do they happen in my game? And how am I giving the player a chance to express status?
So you're talking about status like social status?
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'm pronouncing it weird.
Well, I understood the word that you were saying.
Yeah. I think that's what he means.
Status can mean a lot of different things. Yeah. When you initially said status, I thought of, like, general well-being.
Typical low-status behaviors include fidgeting, avoiding eye contact, touching one's own face, being tense. A high status includes being relaxed, making strong eye contact, and, weirdly, not moving your head while you speak.
So he is actually just talking about your current well-being,
I guess. Well, it's like your social standing.
Well, it's your interpretation of standing right now, right? Because people who are...
Comparative. Your comparative social status.
Yeah.
Relative to your current environment.
At the present time.
Yeah. I feel like that gets carried very well in Fallout games, especially Fallout 2. Mm. Or not Fallout. Think of something else. Half-Life. Half-Life games.
Okay.
Has to do with radiation, whatever. Fallout, Half-Life, they're both the same thing, right? But in Half-Life 2, you've got the police, and they talk to you, and they've got the muffled voices, and there's the guy on the intercom, Professor Breen, and there's a lot of status tone and status symbols and things that are conveyed in that game that give you a feeling of being in a
oppressed position and being in a powerful position and things like that.
Sure. Yeah. Star Wars The Old Republic did some of that, where they have fully animated conversations because it's a BioWare game and you have to have fully animated conversation wheels in a BioWare game. And my primary complaint with it is that they were so exaggerated. The status cues, like, when somebody was feeling a little nervous, they weren't feeling a little nervous. Like, maybe their face was on fire or something. Like, they were moving a lot. And then the people who, I guess, are high status mostly just look angry all the time.
Oh, yeah? Do they still move their head a lot?
No. They barely move at all. And the models aren't very good at facial emoting. They can only do a tiny bit of it. So the difference between I'm, you know, like, satisfied and I'm angry is really small.
Mm.
So, yeah. It done poorly, it almost a detriment. I mean, you can tell what they're trying to get across.
Sure.
But it doesn't actually help make the characters more relatable because it's so exaggerated that you're like, oh, they did that to show me that you're nervous, and not, oh, I'm sorry that you're nervous, actual person.
Sure. It's too cartoon conveyed.
Right.
Lens 81, the lens of character transformation. Powerful stories are able to change their characters. To ensure your characters are transforming in interesting ways, ask yourself these questions. How does each of my characters change throughout the game? How am I communicating those changes to the player, and can I communicate them more clearly or more strongly? Is there enough change? Are the changes surprising and interesting? Are the changes believable? And I have underlined believable and said, this is usually the problem.
Yep. But that's good. Again, this is kind of...
Yeah.
I say maybe this is like intermediate storytelling.
Sure.
I'm not sure we've actually got to advanced yet, but...
Right.
I mean...
And you know, in his defense, this isn't a book about storytelling. It's a book about game design. And I guess he just feels he needs to cover this because it's like, okay, well, maybe these people have no idea about anything and they need to know something about storytelling.
On the other hand, people get paid millions of dollars for Hollywood movies that don't have any character development in them.
So
this is a more difficult concept than we thought.
Apparently, this isn't so straightforward after all. Chapter 19, Worlds Contain Spaces. So for all the emphasis he's putting on worlds, didn't spend very much time on them initially. I guess he's just spending a lot of time on showing what kinds of things you have to put in your world to make it interesting.
Yeah.
Characters and spaces so far. This is chapter 19. Did I say that already?
Mm-hmm.
I said it already and I'm saying it again. So he's got several different organizations for game spaces. Linear organization, grid, web, points in space, and divided space. And I've made some notations that the web... the points in space and the divided space are ultimately all the same thing.
Right.
And really, they're also all the same as the grid.
You just made the angles not right.
Yeah.
They're wrong angles now.
The incorrect angle grid. So that brings us to lens 82, the lens of inner contradiction, because you didn't have a lens about space organization, I guess. A good game cannot contain properties that defeat the game's very purpose. To remove these contradictory qualities, ask yourself these questions. What is the purpose of my game? What are the purposes of each system in my game? Is there anything at all in my game that contradicts these purposes? And if so, how can I change that?
So, I mean, that's actually good advice.
Yeah. Right?
Like, don't have internal inconsistencies
in Absolutely.
Your game or your story.
Yeah, I've added a fourth, fifth point. Is there anything in the game world story's characters that contradict each other?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, internal consistency is just a requirement for making stuff.
Yeah, it's the good barest stuff. The barest level of requirement.
Right.
Because it's the easiest one to figure out.
Well, it is.
Is this thing consistent with itself, right? That we can answer.
Yeah, but once you get a big complicated thing, you have to ask, are all the parts of it consistent with all the other parts of it?
Well, true.
Do they work together to tell the story that I want or portray the world that I want or whatever?
Right.
And
well, but that's a kind of a different thing, right? Like, if it's what I want, then that's a different thing than is it the same as the rest of the game. Because you could just take the whole game and without ever communicating anything else to someone, give that game to someone and say, here's the game or artifact or story or whatever, and say, here's this thing. Is it consistent with itself? And they would be able, without referencing anything else, hopefully, to be able to figure out if the artifact is self-consistent.
Right.
Does it all hold together?
But when your artifact is big and complicated and takes many hours to experience, and there's a lot of data that goes into informing, is this consistent with itself.
Oh yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm just saying that it's more simple than any other kind of question you can ask about consistency. Like, is it consistent with my vision? Well, now you have to have something that's outside the game and comparing it to the. Sure. Or is it consistent with real life? Well, now you have to compare it to all of real life, and that's more complicated. So the barest level of consistency is self-consistency.
Yes.
Lens 83. The lens of the nameless quality. Certain things feel special and wonderful because of their natural organic design. To ensure your game has these properties, ask yourself these questions. Does my design have a special feeling of life, or do parts of my design feel dead? What would make my design feel more alive? Which of Alexander's 15 qualities does my design have? Could it have more of them somehow? And where does my design feel like myself? And Alexander's 15 properties of living structures are levels of scale. I'm not going to read the whole description, I'll just read the highlights here. Levels of scale, strong centers, boundaries, alternating repetition, positive space, good shape, local symmetries, deep interlocking ambiguity, contrast, gradients, roughness, echoes, the void, simplicity, intercom, and not separateness.
Not separateness.
Alexander must be an architect, and yes, indeed, Alexander's approach to architecture. So this guy should stick to exiting, I believe.
Aha. I feel like maybe he should name the quality, and then it won't be the nameless quality.
I know, right? Isn't this what you're doing? Isn't this why you're writing this book? To give names to things so that people can refer to them?
Also, I'm pretty sure that asking, does my game have that certain special something that makes it an instant smash hit, is maybe the hardest? I mean, if the answer is no, maybe it might be easy to answer. But it's really hard to actually answer that yes, because the only actual way to know that is to put it in the public and see if it becomes an instant success.
Yeah.
And, like, this is what makes so many technically well-executed movies and technically well-executed games not memorable and not cultural touchstones for decades to come, right? If you don't have that special something, and that comes up in a lot of critique media and things like that, where this show was fine, like, it didn't do anything wrong, it just wasn't special, so I got bored and stopped watching it.
Yeah. It seems like, though, that's, again, like so many of the other lenses, and there are a number that are good, but like so many of the lenses, it's just not very helpful.
Right.
Like, is this game special and feels alive? I don't know. Why don't you tell me how I would be able to tell that? Well, how about you read this long list of vague terms like non-separateness and gradients? Like, okay, that's right. Not helpful.
Those terms do make more sense if you're talking about building something.
Yeah, but only
a little bit more sense.
Only a little bit. Doesn't help much.
Yeah.
So now he's got a whole bunch of stuff about space designs. This is kind of the architecture chapter, I guess. And then that's the end of the chapter.
All right.
End of chapter 19.